Yes, I'm joined by Dennis Stewart this afternoon for Health Naturally. Good afternoon, Dennis.
Hello, Amanda. How are you, my
dear? I'm wonderful. Wonderful to see you. Thank you.
Thank you.
Now, Dennis, recently it's been reported that the herb peppermint may be useful in treating blood pressure. What is your attitude to the claim?
Oh, I could say a lot about that. The first thing I would say is that blood pressure is blood pressure. So that anyone that has a blood pressure condition before they attempt to do anything, they need to run that past their medical manager. Anything that's suggested as having a benefit in the management of blood pressure should be something that's well and truly proven, well and truly safe, and acknowledged in the medical world as being able to have an explanation as to how any herb or natural substance might address blood pressure. So the alarm bells ring when anything, any herb, purports to be able to reduce blood pressure. The consequences of using that medication needs to be thought through. And unless an understanding of the herb is there, particularly as far as how it works, and more particularly as far as its dosage is concerned, and equally applicably, whether or not there is any toxicity associated with it. It might surprise listeners to know that one of the oldest blood pressure medications has actually been used in mainstream Western medicine, and it was the herb known as Rowolfia serpentina. Some of the very old doctors, I suspect, might recollect the time when they would prescribe reserpine, which was an active chemical extracted from Rowolfia. But the herb Rowolfia was also used in this country, not now as far as I'm aware, as basically a herbal preparation manufactured, centred around a correct dosage, prescribed by a medical practitioner and monitored, and was very, very effective. So the fact that there are other herbs, peppermint and yarrow and other herbs, have an effect on addressing blood pressure is not absolutely surprising. The herbal world has many examples of remedies that have an effect on blood pressure, heart rate, all those sorts of things. The only thing that I would say to the listener, and they would expect me to say this, is anything that is mentioned as an alternative preparation, particularly for blood pressure, should be discussed with your medical manager. You don't fool around with blood pressure. It can be a silent killer. And to be fair, the modern medical preparations are hard to beat, in my opinion. So that was an interlude, if you like, or an introductory discussion on this that's going around presently, that peppermint, which is a good herb, may have a benefit in addressing some aspects of blood pressure.
And we've got Rick from Blackalls Park on the line. Hi, Rick, how can we help you today?
Yes, thank you very much. My wife had major heart surgery last year, picked up on a routine examination that one of the her symptoms was she was tired all the time.
Yes.
She'd be told after the operation, 6 to 10 months, she'd be feeling a lot better. Well, yes. We're up to about the 10 to 12 months now, and she's still feeling quite tired all the time. So I was just wondering if there's anything we might be looking at,
Rick,
to help her along.
Rick, the first thing that I would be saying here is that the tiredness could be just a byproduct of the procedure, and that's not uncommon, and sometimes it does take a little bit longer for fatigue to get under control. But the other thing I would say is that if you're concerned, and you obviously you are, I would be discussing it with, first of all, your GP. She would presumably be under a cardiologist.
She is, yeah.
Okay. I think the pathway to go is to seek a referral from your GP see a cardiologist to have the medication reviewed. Now, I'm not suggesting in any way it's wrong medication, but sometimes there is an explanation in the medication that people take as to the reason why that their fatigue or tiredness. And sometimes heart medications, particularly a group of them that are used in the context of heart surgery and heart regulation, can cause ongoing fatigue. It would not be proper for me to say, oh, look, here, try this or try that. And I would caution you against doing that. This is not something to discuss at a health food store or even a naturopath. This is something that I would take seriously, get it looked at, get the routine looked at, see what she's taking. From my experience as a natural therapist over 50 years, I'm fully aware of the way in which patients being well treated by their doctors and cardiologists, by having their medication reviewed, modified somewhat, that can give them a head start in overcoming the fatigue. So first thing I would say, see your GP, get a referral, talk to your cardiologist about the long term that your wife has been experiencing this, get his opinion whether or not it is coming from medication and whether or not it needs to be modified. I would do that as a starting point.
Lovely. Much appreciated, Dennis. Thank you very much.
Thank you, mate.
Thanks,
good.
Rick.
Good.
Bye.
Good.
Bye.
Okay, we've got Scott from Fern Bay on the line. Scott, you want to talk about olive oil?
Yeah, good morning, Dennis.
Hello, Scott.
How are you?
I'm well.
Just briefly, you helped me about 35 years ago get through bone marrow cancer by giving me St. Mary's thistle.
Oh, yes. Good herb, great herb.
Yeah, protect my liver. But you often talk about olive oil and the merits of it. And I saw a thing recently talking about olive oil, and sailors often use oil to calm the ocean, like it breaks the surface tension of the ocean. And oddly enough, olive oil will spread more than any other oil.
Yes.
And the molecule, apparently, it'll spread down to one molecule thick, so a tablespoon will cover an acre and calm the ocean. But apparently the molecule is, one end of the molecule is has an affinity for water and the other one doesn't. So it's might be why it's so good in our body.
Well, you might have a point there. Scott, you're in front of me. That is a very biochemical, perhaps even pharmacological explanation. But I cannot say anything more. That's a very fascinating way of looking at the herb, because it is a herb. And you would know that I'm a great fan of olive oil. I consider it one of the great remedies of antiquity. Our good Lord would have used it. It's a herb that comes from the Greeks, the Romans, Jewish culture, flows through history. And the Mediterranean diet, of course, is the best example of a culture, a dietary routine, where olive oil has a prominent role to play. I recommend it anything for quietening down acidity in the stomach. I recommend it as an underrated mild remedy for constipation. It's very soothing to the gut. And the good thing about it is it's what's called a monounsaturated fat, quite different from a saturated fat, and therefore is considered and shown to have benefits in lessening the plaque deposition, the onset of atherosclerosis and vascular disease. This has been put down as one of the explanations as to people of Greek culture particularly who are living on the traditional Greek diet seem to be free from many of the diseases that we Anglos experience, and that's all put down to the unique chemistry of this remarkable herb, which is still, in my opinion, not utilised adequately by people of our Anglo culture, but it should be. Unfortunately, it's getting in that direction. 30 mils of olive oil a day, in my opinion, is a good dose to continue to get the benefits of this remarkable remedy.
Well, thank heavens for multiculturalism.
That's exactly right. It's one of the great benefits because I can remember, and I guess I'm much older than you, but I can remember as a kid in growing up in this town in the late 40s, early 50s, olive oil was virtually unheard of. It was not something that one would put on one's food. It was only when the European immigrants coming into the country brought with them some of their dietary and cultural ideas that foods that we'd hitherto never had began to become popular. And they're so popular now that olives are grown in the Hunter Valley up where I am as a second crop to wine. And that, of course, is another story as to the benefits of the Mediterranean diet. Olive oil and wine is perhaps the panacea for a good, healthy, happy life.
Yep. Well, thank you very much, Dennis. Love your work.
Thanks you, very mate. Much,
thank
Scott.
You.
Bye. Hi, John. How can we help you today?
Say a month ago, I'm a concreter.
Yes, John.
Getting up and down, you know.
Yes.
And then sort of once, like I pushed up both hands, got up, sort of hurt. They felt sore. And then when I'd finished, we'd packed up and everything. Well, my wrists just got worse and worse and worse and worse.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know if I've strained the ligaments, and everyone's saying it's arthritis because I'm an elderly gentleman.
John, have you had an investigated?
Yeah.
And what did your GP say?
They reckon it's arthritis and maybe strained tendons. I've had MRIs. I've had...
Did the MRIs show up evidence of osteoarthritis?
I think so.
Yeah. Osteoarthritis is what I refer to as a wear and tear condition, and your work would typically feed into that. A couple of things. Well, first of all, your GP prescribed something for you?
Tramadol.
Oh, okay. What I would suggest, and it won't clash with what your GP suggested, was that you do a couple of things, one of which might sound very simple, but it cost you nothing and be quite pleasurable. And I reflect back on an elderly lady that I used to visit regularly on Wednesday nights when, as a young man, I would go with others to Newtown to a place called Reby Hall, which was a church hall where we'd have a meeting. And one elderly lady was always running late when we went to pick her up. And she was running late because she always had her feet in a foot bath of hot Epsom salt baths, and she swore by them, and we dare not contradict her. We would rather run late than let her curtail what was virtually her routine. Now, yeah. I took that as a bit of a joke initially, but in my very many years of listening to people, particularly elderly people, and I'm one of them, unfortunately, or fortunately.
Well, yeah, me too.
Listening to that, many people still get benefit from a regular soothing, relieving hand or foot bath of Epsom salts. And one of the things that I would recommend as a starter is when you're sitting down at night watching telly or whatever, have a hand bath, one on each side, put your hand in it, let it soak in a hand bath based on Epsom salts, which you can get from anywhere. Do that regularly, even if it's only providing some symptomatic management. It's soothing, relieving. I'm sure it's more than just a placebo. But as well as that, what I would say is that I would go and get hold of, from your pharmacy or health food store, a product that contains glucosamine and chondroitin. Now, there are many products in your pharmacy and health food store that would contain glucosamine and chondroitin. They are the two favourite remedies for progressively affecting osteoarthritic conditions. Very rarely will they work immediately, but over a matter of months, most patients that I put onto Glucosaplex, for instance, as one of the products, do get a benefit. So I'd suggest you do that. And thirdly, what I would suggest you do, and you, again, you can get this from your pharmacy, is get some capsules or tablets of the oldest anti-inflammatory and analgesic herb that we know of, and that's willow bark. Now, all those things are inexpensive, will not clash, as far as I'm aware, with what your doctor has prescribed, and should give you a bit of relief in order to keep doing the job that you obviously love.
Yeah. What was
the glucosamine?
What was it?
What's that? Glucosamine and chondroitin. C-H-O-N-D-R-O-I-T-O-N, chondroitin. Your health food store or pharmacy would know very well that products based on that. If you have trouble, you can always get them from my rooms at Ulampton.
Okay. And the Epsom salt bath.
Yes.
Right, is that just warm water? Or
well, you obviously don't put it in boiling water, obviously. But
that's what I said, warm.
You put it in warm water and keep topping it up for about a quarter of an hour or 20 minutes.
Okay.
Now, I know that sounds simple, John, but there's many aspects of medicine that are valid despite their having a tick from the mainstream medical profession.
Yeah, exactly. Like glucosamine is one that your body doesn't make as much when you get older.
Well, that's a good way of looking at it, but that's what I'd suggest. Become a bit proactive. Whatever you're working, you're giving the government tax money, which they desperately need, and a quid in your pocket, John.
Good on you, John. Thanks for the call and good luck with that. Next, we have Donna from Warners Bay. Hi, Donna. How can we help you?
Hi. I just wanted to ask Dennis. Hi, Dennis.
Hello.
I've been recently diagnosed with bronchiectasis.
Yes.
Which is a condition of the lung.
Yes.
And I have got bacteria in the lower lobes of the lung, and they're wanting, meaning the medical team wanting me to bring up that sputum, but I'm struggling to bring it up. And okay. They've put me on various things like a nebulizer and a saline to try and thicken it to bring it up. And I just want to know, is there any particular herb or eat anything that I can eat to help this?
Well, look, you're going to be a little bit surprised when I say that, in my opinion, one of the best things that you could do is get onto some capsules of garlic.
Now, okay.
Garlic has multiple benefits. You can get what are called garlic pearls.
Yes.
That is garlic. I think it's garlic oil surrounded by a gelatin capsule. Mm-hmm. They're very inexpensive.
Right.
They're not too bad. You might lose a few friends, but who cares? But what they do have is a mild disinfectant action within the respiratory system. Mm-hmm. And they are also useful for liquefying, if you like, the phlegm or the sputum, and helping get it up that way. And I'm not aware of garlic in any way clashing with what your good doctors would have prescribed. But I would bring that in. The only other thing that I would suggest is that what we call hot herbs, particularly ginger, is useful as a juice, not so much as a juice, as a drink. Ginger tea, for instance. Ginger tea is also what's called mucolytic. That is, it breaks down the mucus and assists in its being got rid of. So I'd start with that regular taking of garlic capsules and some ginger tea across the day.
Okay. And with the garlic tablets, how many would you be looking at?
Look, it's not a high-dose thing. They're on the container. I would be surprised if it was much more than one preparation three times daily, but be guided by what's on the container, because a product that purports to have a medicinal effect is recognised by our Therapeutic Goods Administration as being a medication, and therefore dosage is pretty well mandatory on it. So I think that would probably apply to garlic. So be guided by what the dosage is on the pack.
Okay. Righto then. Good. Okay then. Super. Thanks for your time, Dennis.
Thank you, Donna.
Thanks a lot, cheers. Donna. Bye. To NURFM 103.7. This is Health Naturally with Dennis Stewart, and we've got, is Henning from Nord's Wharf on the line. Is that correct?
Yep.
Hi. Now, you want to talk about arthritis?
Yeah. Just sharing experience.
Sure.
I'm 75 years old. Been riding motorbikes since I was about 19.
Good on you.
And in 2004... I nearly had to stop riding because my hands stopped working. That is, the fingers and thumbs and stuff wouldn't operate the levers. At work, all day, on those days, I drink like 5 cups of tea, sipping, enjoying that. Right? And so I don't enjoy it. Had this discussion with a workmate, and they said, don't drink tea. I said, yeah, but it's got all this good stuff. Don't drink tea. So I stopped, and a week later, my hands were fine.
How about that?
And since then, I've told a few mates, and they've done the same thing.
Now, this is a very provocative conclusion, Henning.
No, the facts worked.
Yeah, look, I believe you. Look, what can work can sometimes be almost inexplicable. What we do know, was it ordinary tea that you had been drinking? So just ordinary tea.
Lipton, bushels, whatever.
Yeah, good. Just ordinary tea. It wasn't a medicinal tea or anything like that.
No. Okay. Everyday normal tea.
Okay. Well, tea does contain a number of constituents, theophyllin, theobromine, caffeine. I'm not aware of any of those constituents having explicit anti-inflammatory characteristics, but obviously... in your case and in your friend's case, they did. So who am I to contradict it? I'm not. I've been practicing for too long to relegate things because there is no scientific explanation that I'm aware of. There must be an explanation. It must come from the chemistry of tea. And as I've said, there are a number of alkaloids, theophyllin, theobromine, caffeine, go for it. I can't explain anything as to how it, because I drink tea. You've just sabotaged my day.
I'm just sharing the love. And my take is that each of our bodies are a pile of chemical things.
Yes.
And what works for you may not work for me and vice versa.
Oh, look, I think you're absolutely right there. And that's why I'm not prepared to rule any of these observations. I'm not prepared to rule them out because just as I saw that lady in Newtown years ago vouch for the efficacy of Epsom salt baths, I'm not going to relegate anything else as not being credible because there was no explanation in her case. There may not be an adequate explanation for the tea situation, but it doesn't matter. It works. It's inexpensive. It's worthwhile trying.
Thank you so much for your call, Henning. You've just, opened a can of worms there for Dennis.
Oh, my regular drinking of tea. And I'm really a bit shattered with that because...
I love tea. I drink it by the bucket load. So,
do you?
Yeah. But anyway, I guess
I've become a bit of a tea drinker in recent times. Well, more than recent times. But... yeah, I buy a tea from the supermarket, which comes from the north of England. I'll not mention any names, but it's a great tea.
Oh, tea's great.
It comes with the accent.
Awesome. All right, well, we've got Sally from Cessnock on the line. And, Sally, you want to talk about one of my favourite subjects, restless legs.
I do. I also want to say hello to Dennis, his colleague here up in Cessnock. And always great to hear your program, Dennis. Fantastic. But mine. Question is to Amanda this time.
Hey!
And it's about what you actually use on restless legs. I had a patient yesterday and I could not remember it. So when I heard the program, I thought, I'll ring through.
Oh, okay. Well, myself, I use cypress oil. So basically, I just get a glass roller bottle, 10 mil, and I put, for me, they sort of say between, around 5 drops. I personally, I put in probably about 15 because it works for me. But obviously, you just, you know, just judge it yourself and fill up that rollerball bottle with fractionated coconut oil. And then you can rub it on your legs before bed. If you don't have fractionated coconut oil, that's fine. You can just use a moisturiser. So put a couple of drops of the cypress oil, or put a blob of moisturiser on your hand, put a couple of drops of the cypress oil on top, and then just rub it in.
Terrific. Wonderful.
That's all right. Hopefully it works.
I'm hoping it works. And hello, Dennis. I hope you're having a great day.
Oh, I always do when I'm in front of this lovely lady.
Oh,
I'm sure you do. Anyway, lovely listening to you as always. And have a great day, you too.
Thanks, Sally. Appreciate the call. Bye. Now, Dennis, we've got a few minutes left, so we might continue talking about peppermint. Mm. Now, what other benefits could peppermint have?
Okay. Now, I'm talking about the peppermint being taken here as a medicinal herb, with caution and in the correct dosage. And I want to emphasise that at the conclusion of the program. Peppermint belongs to a group of aromatic herbs with essential oils. They have more powerful effects than what we think. When used wisely, they can be a pleasant preparation, but when used unwisely, they do have some side effects. Peppermint has predominantly been used as an anti-nauseant, that is, as an agent to lessen nausea and vomiting. And so in older days, perhaps still these days, peppermint water used to be something that was offered to patients, particularly subsequent to anaesthetic procedures, where there was some vomiting and nausea. Peppermint water, based on peppermint oil, a dilute form of it, was given with great success because it is an anti-nauseant that resists vomiting. I'd like to think that that was still something that was used because some of these older procedures are dying out, which is sad. But any looking at the history of peppermint as an oral safely administered medication would lead up to this conclusion. The other thing about it is that it is remarkably effective in addressing what we call a grumbling gallbladder.
Right.
Many patients present with gallbladders that experience episodes of colic. You'd call it gallbladder colic, cholecystitis. And these are patients that may not be able to have a medical procedure, i.e. the removal of any gallstones. These are patients that may not have gallstones but have a gallbladder that's got a little bit of gravel in it or periodically becomes uncomfortable and tends to promote nausea, vomiting, spasm and colic. Here, the sensible use of peppermint, again in a simple form, peppermint tea, peppermint water. I would prefer to use tincture of peppermint, which is much more medicinal and easily regulated. What it does there, to put it simple, is to improve the flow of bile from the gallbladder, and this tends to have a drainage effect on the contents of the gallbladder. The older naturopaths would say that it was a flushing effect, that the herb peppermint, along with many others, can be referred to as cholagogues, improving the drainage, the movement of bile from being congested in the gallbladder, flowing down the bile duct into the gastrointestinal tract. It works well there, and particularly for patients that might be waiting for a gallbladder procedure, they're on the list, so to speak. If there are episodes occurring that are unpleasant, don't overlook the benefits, say, of peppermint water or some form of peppermint taken in a regulated medicinal dose. For goodness sake, don't just take a swig of peppermint oil. That's very unsafe. If you were to use peppermint, use it as a tea, which is very safe, or use it as a tincture from a pharmacist or a naturopath, which similarly can be dose-related. Herb with great possibilities, not as well known as it should be, but hopefully today with looking at some of these things, we can see why it might be coming back into popularity.
Mm, I find peppermint really good. for breathing when I've got
a
cold.
Yes.
Also, I was saying to you earlier when I was going through chemo, I had peppermint oil.
Yes.
And it was a good stuff. You're not just anything that you just get from the, not just anything. In my water, a couple of drops, and that helped with nausea when I was drinking that when I was going through chemo. So
and your use of it, is supported adequately from the literature, some of which I have in front of me here, and your taking of it is very safe. I'm obliged to emphasise this. If one is going to use peppermint oil or any herbal oil, for goodness sake, do it in drop dosages. Don't take a swig. It's not like that. They're powerful substances, usually very safe, but if they're abused, they can be problematical.
That's right. That's right. Well, thank you very much. It's been very educational today.
Thank you, Amanda.
And we'll catch up with you next week.
Thank you.
Thank you. Health Naturally on 2NURFM.